In 1988, the crime rate in the United States rises 400%. The once great city of New York becomes the one maximum security prison for the entire country. A 50-foot containment wall is erected along the New Jersey shoreline, across the Harlem River, and down along the Brooklyn shoreline. It completely surrounds Manhattan Island. All bridges and waterways are mined.
I don't think you were the milkman. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 342. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, call him Snake Dunaway.
Don't call me Snake. Oh, hi. This week's movie is one of them future past dillies. You know, where they make a film in 1981, but it takes place in 1998, but you are watching it in 2017, and you are thinking, how is it going to be at least 2018 before the president builds a wall around New York? You know, one of them movies. Also, did you ever consider this is a movie about a one-eyed snake being inserted into a dirty hole who is just trying to pull out before his head explodes? Dirty Carpenter is always dirty.
Wow.
This may be, I don't know what to think of your intro.
Can you stop having him go first?
Yeah, no kidding. Just makes everyone else look bad. That was incredible. All right. And the wall stuff, very timely. Nicely done. Also with us, Randy, he sure likes to stare at that clock on his wrist for really long periods of time, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Did I ever tell you boys about the time I ran a postmodern gladiatorial arena design firm?
Yes. No, I mean.
It was actually postmodern, but you get the idea. It was called Randy's Death Arenas. And we had three important rules to getting out of there alive. Number one, always design the fighting area in such a way that your David could overcome your Goliath there if possible. Parts of the ring itself should be usable as weapons to the David who keeps his head about him and maybe was a commando in some special forces or something. Number two, use magical sight lines to make it so that everyone in the former bookstore you're building this thing in can see all of the action, but no one can see when your David concocts his victory unfairly and, I don't know, they'd shoot him or something. Number three, egress. That means people leaving through the outdoor. Give the crowd what they really want. A way for 500 people in the space the size of a nightclub to exit in less than 3 seconds, and they're gone.
True story. That was quite the arena.
Yeah, that was a hell of an arena.
It wasn't quite L.A., though, but it was good.
Yeah, it was all right. The L.A. arena thing was maybe a little bit more expansive or whatever. But also, we'll get to that in a second. Finally, Brian, the Duke of New York, the big man, a number one Ibbot.
Oh my gosh, you couldn't have picked a better intro for me.
All right.
Who's the leader of the Manhattan prison colony that's a sex machine to all the chicks? Duke. You're damn right. Who lives in a train car the third door down by the campfire?
Duke.
Can you dig it? Who's the cat that won't cop out when Snake Plissken starts to shout?
Duke.
Right on. They say that Duke's an ineffective leader for the revolution. Watch your mouth. But I'm talking about the Duke. We can dig it.
Oh, my gosh. That was great. The only black guy in prison, by the way.
That's right. Oh, you just stepped on one of my best jokes.
Well,
that's
a really,
that's a really good point. Well,
yeah. His chauffeur was black as well, right?
Was what? He?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the whole, right, the whole lowrider mobile.
With the chandeliers on it, or with lamps or whatever.
Right,
the
chandeliers, yes.
Yeah, his pilot with the headlight chandeliers and the disco ball.
I want to drive with some chandeliers.
Anyway.
It shows you what happens when polite society just goes out the window. People will be putting chandeliers on cars right, and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the first sign of trouble. It's weird how this movie is shockingly white. It's yes. You know, I listen, if we're talking about a 1997 far flung future where most criminals are white, okay, fine, whatever. Maybe mm-hmm. we've done a little better that way. But if this is the case, then you know, regular society is a much more diverse place than before, because there were no people of color at all in that place.
Were there any? Okay, so there was just like one or two women, but it was mostly like mm-hmm. white dudes, right?
Yeah, all white dudes. Pretty much just white dudes are all committing the big crimes and getting sent to the
which is actually very believable to me.
Yeah, it kind of is to me too sometimes.
Especially talking about New York.
Yeah.
New York.
And it wasn't just that you know, this is a filmmaker or studio that didn't want to pay any black actors. These are pasty white, Harry Dean Stanton, Ernest Borgnine, mm-hmm. Donald Pleasance white actors. This is like, Lee Van Cleef is swarthy in this film. Like, yeah. It's remarkable how white these guys are.
Got some sweet earrings that Lee Van Cleef.
You know, you totally forgot. You got to go back. Now, not in the prison, but in the movie itself, there was quite a few staffed at the Statue of Liberty, Liberty Island facilities. Okay. As far as the guy who was doing the talking with the pilot.
Yeah.
He I loved his scene.
Oh, yeah. He was all right.
Yeah.
There was it's Escape from New York, everybody listening. It's we've seen Escape from LA. We saw this in the wrong order, but that's how they stream, so that's why we saw them that way. And I had forgotten almost everything about Escape from New York. Like I feel like I remembered more of Escape from LA, probably because it was newer. That came out in 96.
And such a time difference. That was 15 years difference.
Yeah,
between the original and the sequel.
It's pretty crazy. I'm trying to think of another movie. What's another series where they take that long to do a sequel? I guess Star Wars, maybe Mad Max.
Fury Road.
Fury Road. Speaking of which, they should have George Miller just remake this. This would be a great thing
for
him to do.
It is very Mad Max-esque, right down to like a Thunderdome-esque wrestling ring, you know, boxing ring.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I'm going to say something controversial here. I know that Escape from New York is considered one of the great classics of all time. Snake Plissken is a great, iconic, tough guy character, right up there with, you know, Rambo and, you know, the big names. He's one of those guys, and I'm cool with that. I'm totally cool with that. This movie's not that great. I mean, hold on. It's cool. It's better than L.A. I'll give you that. Way better than L.A.
Lay out your reasoning.
My reasoning is actually very simple, and it's not really their fault. It's. I was having a hard time being okay with how cheap everything looked. I had a hard time.
Interesting.
Had a hard time dealing with how dark everything was, and I don't mean dark tonally. I mean like the lights just aren't on. You know, like there's just literally you can't see.
There was a lot of filming at like the L.A. city dump before it was moved out in the country.
Yeah,
and like you put lights on things, and suddenly you could see, I don't know, a tree in the background, and it was a perfectly fine living tree. So they're like, okay, we'll just shine that light straight at the ground.
Yeah,
and so you couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
Even the actors.
I feel like part of it is I'm just spoiled by newer stuff where the urgency of the timer on his wrist and some of that stuff would have been handled just better, or not just even special effects, just better, just a better budget. You know, this just felt like a student film or something, like some Ida made in junior high. Like it was like
this was not that far into John Carpenter's career. And this film was made for $6 million. I think John Carpenter is the master of making some amazing films on the cheap. This movie, and maybe the reason why you're a little disappointed, this movie really almost looks like it was made for two times as much of budget, but every once in a while the seams show and you realize it's just a $6 million movie.
Yeah.
So I think he kind of suffers from the fact that he was making a movie that was really outside the budget, and I think he did a damn fine job.
All right. I'm not saying he didn't. And that's what I mean. It's a thing out of time. Like I can't look at it. If I look at it from the perspective of somebody in 1982 or whatever it was. Yeah. Was
81.
It one?
81.
Yeah. By the way, listen to this run of films he had. He was busy. 1980, The Fog in 1980. 1981, a year later, Escape from New York. 82, The Thing, which I do think is a classic and amazing and still holds up.
Yeah.
83, Christine. 84, Starman. He went 4 years in a row with a break in 85, making a movie one after the other, in some cases like 6 months apart. Like, that's crazy. He skipped a year and did Big Trouble in Little China after Starman. But it's the only time he skipped a year. I don't. Has anyone else done that many movies you can recognize? Like, all of those are recognizable.
Seems like Spielberg must have done. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Seems like Spielberg might be the only other one.
I don't know.
Poop them out one right after
another. Do you think Spielberg ever did a run like that, though? That seems crazy. Yeah, I guess we could look it up.
Seems like there had to be a time in the 80s, even if you throw in Batteries Not Included, which I think was memorable, if not spectacular.
Now, you know, I think every director is a movie lover of sorts, but I think people like Steven Spielberg and John Carpenter, those kind of guys, I think that they're more than just in love with the movies. They're just, I don't know how to describe it, but I really believe everything he is doing is monumental.
Yeah,
know how you would tell if he was a cynical, cheap director, though. Like,
no, he's not cynical at all.
But I don't know how you would tell. How could you prove or disprove it? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you look at this film, the problem with it is that it's old now.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to put it in its place, you know?
Yeah.
Where you're
like, none of this makes sense anymore, and none of it, you know, looks good, and so on and so on. Like, if you start adding all those things up, you might decide, wow, John Carpenter was just slapdash.
Yeah.
Luckily, John Carpenter is still alive, and he does interviews, and he doesn't mind sitting down with the small guy and just talking about films. And I think he still loves films.
Yeah, but he hasn't made a movie since Ghosts of Mars in 2001, which was a shit ball.
The one. We were trying to remember what the last John Carpenter thing was, and it was Natasha Kinski in that one, right?
It is a piece of poo rolled in dung, wrapped in a piece of rotten bacon, and then poked three holes in it. It's awful. It's an awful, awful movie. And I think that's, he went out on that, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm glad he hasn't made any more movies, because one, he's old, and two, I think...
that old.
Sendry emails to Randy Deluxe.
Right.
What he is. It's freaking weird when in 2017, like, they roll out an old guy and you're supposed to like go
Howard.
Yeah, Ron Howard. But Ron Howard's not as old as, say, Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood's pretty old.
Robert Altman or
he's dead.
I mean, there's some old directors, Francis Ford Coppola, who still turn out pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
You can't just use the age.
I think that John Carpenter is more of a director of the youth. I don't think that he's going to translate into something more mature. I think he is what he is. He's always made these kind of movies, and this is his fare. And I think at a certain point, of course, you go, okay, well, I'm not in touch with the peoples anymore.
Well, plus how old is too old? Like, Spielberg's 70 and he's wrapping production on Ready Player One
And he's kept up, because if you watch the BFG documentary, the behind the scenes stuff, he uses all the latest technologies. He hasn't sat down.
No, he's done all right. But look, so you guys are not wrong. The difference between Spielberg and everybody else is he was putting out two films a year on average.
Right.
So let's see, Temple of Doom 84 plus some mini series called Strokes of Genius. Anyway, then he went, did Amazing Stories, the show. He was executive producer and directed two episodes of that and The Color Purple that year. He did Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, and Always in the same year. Hook. Oh, Jurassic Park was a jump. 93.
Jurassic Park and Schindler's List were both 93.
That's crazy.
Those are both kind of sizable.
That's crazy to me. That's nuts.
He started attaching his name to a lot of things that he wasn't necessarily completely involved, like you might would think. Like,
but Schindler's List and Jurassic Park are up Steven Spielberg movies. Like,
oh, absolutely, yeah, he was in on those.
Yeah, he was as in as you can get.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's funny though when you look at the more recent stuff. It's always like a popcorn film and a. And something more serious, like, all right, 93, Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. 97 had Lost World, Jurassic Park, and Amistad. 2002, Minority Report, and Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, yeah. Both those suck. No, I'm just kidding.
Or 2005, War of the Worlds and Munich. I mean, he pairs up a popcorn, like a, right. Here's the movie they want me to make, and then here's the movie I want to make.
Yeah, look at that. 2011, War Horse and the Adventures of Tintin.
Right.
Same year.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
That's crazy.
I just can't. I want to try to steer this boat because I feel like it says something about us that we're comparing John Carpenter to people that he is not comparable to. Like, you know
other
what I'm
than
saying?
Other it's than a good you know, point. It's a good point. You know, being prolific during the time period. That was really the question. And yeah, you're right. Sure.
Because Steven Spielberg will be making movies until he dies because he has an industry around him. He has a gigantic corporation that is determined to keep putting the name Spielberg on films, whether he's
going to prop him up,
whether he's doing a good job or not. Yeah. John Carpenter needs to be compared to people like Guy Ritchie and Steven Soderbergh and George Miller. You know, like this is much more.
Soderbergh's a great comparison because he was also churning out stuff in the 90s pretty regularly.
Yeah. And,
right?
And on
the size of videotape. And
like,
sure.
Where will Tarantino be when he turns? Well, if he makes it to 70,
he'll make it. He'll be 70 and he'll be sitting around
working in a shoe store.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting little comparison there because Tarantino has a shtick and so does Carpenter. Carpenter has a shtick. He has this thing he does that we love, but you can't recapture that lightning in a bottle, right? So, like, if anyone ever says we're going to make another Kurt Russell movie in a post-apocalyptic place where he tries to get away from some Asian gangsters with a patch on his eye or something, you'd be like, no, do not do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it does feel
and that's the thing.
It feels
it's
sacred.
The same thing with Tarantino.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
If you heard about Pulp Fiction 2 coming out, you'd be like, no, don't do that.
No, you're not wrong. And Spielberg, if it's funny because as we're using all these comparisons, he's the one that's made those flubs a little bit. Like that last Indiana Jones movie was a big mistake. It was a piece of crap and did not perform and was, you know, is considered to be the biggest black eye on his career. You didn't have to make a sequel to that thing. I don't know why they're making another one. That fifth one scares the hell out of me because who knows what that looks like in 2020. So,
I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing that John Carpenter stands out above all the rest of his peers. He is a true, complete filmmaker, all the way down to the co-scoring in this movie and in most of his movies.
I knew you were going to say that. And really, all he does is reduce the cost of music to zero.
Yeah. Like, but yes, he does. But it is really a. Effective music. I mean, could he really hire anybody for the? I think it was very effective.
No, we're jumping around on this film, but I was so disappointed in the music. I was just
There's no score at all for a good portion of the movie. I wrote that down. Like, there's long lengths of time where there's no music playing, and when the music does play, it's the same thing that we heard during the opening credits. It's that same
in every other John Carpenter film.
Yeah.
How about Halloween?
If I did that for 30 minutes, that would be the score.
Listen, no, I'm going to give you Halloween, Dunaway. Absolutely. Halloween is an iconic theme. I mean, it's not very complicated, but it's very, like, here it is. I have it.
I didn't have the pitch right.
You know, you were a little off. It's fine, though. It's fine. We'll forgive you that. I think that's still very chilling and effective and kind of informed slasher movie themes for decades after that. So I'm gonna give you that one. Sometimes simple is good, but in this movie, it's really lame. It's just...
Maybe I should have come out right at the top of the show and said I'm a huge Carpenter fan. Mm. I love the simplicity of most of his movies, and I love the storytelling he does. It always feels unique, even though I know it's not. And there's something about the way he tells a story, either visually or through the characters. Even the crappy dialogue seems to drive the movies along for me. I really like Carpenter.
And he's constantly aware of what's come before him. and right. and he uses it. He iterates on that previous stuff. You know, Alfred Hitchcock famously said the way to create suspense was to hide a bomb and then make the viewer and the people in front of the camera wonder where the bomb is and when it's going to go off. I mean, this movie, he on the cheap has one character say to another, now there's a bomb inside you and it's going to go off in 22 hours. And you know, like, that's the cheapest thing imaginable.
Yeah,
just to say
right. it, like, is
there's a thing.
It works though.
Looking at his watch.
It works if you're, I mean, there's a, like, again, if this was remade today, and I'm actually for this, so I know a lot of people are like, oh, don't touch this, a classic, whatever. I disagree. I think, and plus I think L.A. cheapened its classicness a little bit because L.A. is bad.
Yeah,
but I think if you want to, I was talking to Jerry about this. We both share this opinion. I have no problem when somebody comes out and goes, they're remaking this classic movie from your childhood. I'm totally cool with it because every once in a while it gets right. They do it right. Mm-hmm. And this is ripe for a redo. I love post-apocalyptic ideas. I love what they do with movies like, you know, Dread was amazing as compared to, you know, Judge Dredd. There's lots of examples. Fury Road, I always bring up. I know it's, you know, ad nauseum at this point, but it's a great example of this, that you can still do this stuff. You can take it into the future. You can take what we know and the budgets we have and the filmmaking we make now and the expertise we have now, and you can make a better, cooler thing and expand on it. And I think Escape from New York is absolutely doable right now.
You got a really good
argument. What do you think are the odds, though? Because, like, you just named a few where I feel like people really hit a home run from a hard curveball. But, like, when you start counting things like Tron Legacy, like, what do you think are the odds that you're going to just take some property from 25 years ago and turn it into a good piece of
art? Are you saying Tron Legacy was a good thing or a bad thing?
A steaming pile of crap.
Really?
Great soundtrack.
It was amazing soundtrack, really good look, terrible movie, bad story, lots of problems. Yeah. But you're right. The odds are hard. Like, that Ghostbusters thing had potential, and I think kind of sucked. I think that it's harder to do than we think, and when it does happen, it's amazing. But once in a while, you'll see something you forgot was even a movie before, like 310 to Yuma is an incredible modern Western based on an old 60s Western that was kind of unremarkable. So I think
you could... The True Grit remake, I think, was really good.
Yeah, it was incredible.
The Jeff Bridges one.
There you go, an incredible one.
Can I go back and just argue for just a second that Tron Legacy was pretty damn good? I mean, have you ever watched the original?
Yeah.
The original is a steaming pile of crap, but it's enjoyable. There's things about it that just make it unique and fun. But I think Tron Legacy did okay, and it did okay
at
the box office.
But for how much time and how many innovations and how many writers they could have had working on Tron Legacy to make it as really, really amazing. It feels like it just came up short. It was visually pretty. It sounded great.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel like it wasn't, it was a whiff.
Story was a whiff.
It was totally a whiff. And here's the thing. And this is my argument. Remake it. Like, don't even Fury Road it where it's a future story or another story. Mm-hmm. Straight up reinvent it. Say, let's do Tron again, but let's approach it from all the modern things we know about computers now and the way things work now. And let's make a modern Tron movie about Tron and CeeLo, or whatever his name was. What was his name? whatever the dumb program's name was. I don't remember. But anyway.
MCP?
All that stuff. Let's take,
I prefer CeeLo.
Let's take it and make it a brand new thing. Don't try to make a sequel with old Jeff Bridges.
Look, yes. The problem with Tron Legacy was that it felt like a movie where they had the idea for a movie with hackers and technology and being stuck in a, you know, virtual world, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody said, hey, we could make this a Tron sequel, you know, after they came up with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's formulaic up the butt as far as, like, what you get these days, 2000s, 2010s, whatever.
Sure.
It feels like it was like, all right, this could have been anything. They just decided to paint it with Tron colors.
You're right.
See Escape from New York Legacy. I would go see that. I mean, I'm down.
I would too.
More like a video game than a... I totally would too.
But this is my whole point.
Point. Can be done and done very well. It's a very clever idea and can be done really well.
Totally agree. So, but that's my entire point, is this is an opportunity not to extend it and have old man,
but
have him do a cameo. Fine. Let him be the bad guy, whatever. But recast Snake Plissken. Let's go back.
We've already seen this movie, remade, Prisoner on Film Sack. I mean, it was going to get the president's daughter.
Sure. That was a prison. Yeah, space prison. Yeah.
Right. It might as well have been called Escape from Space.
You know, moan all you want. Moan all you want, but Big Trouble in Little China is not just a spiritual successor to this. It's like he was practicing for that movie when he made this.
Yeah, it's almost the exact same character. You're right.
Brian, it's funny because now in the comics, they've actually got a team up between Snake Plissken and whoever the character is from Big Trouble in Little China. I can't remember the name.
I would read. Is there a Snake Plissken comic? This is flat out. Comics.
Yes,
I would totally read that.
Oh,
is
there? I've seen it on the shelves.
What?
For years. Just,
what? Is there really?
Oh, yeah. I'm.
It's dark. Is it Dark Horse? It's something like that. It's not.
IDW
or something like that. It's not Marvel DC to my memory, but
Jack Burton, by the way.
Yeah, look
Jack
at this.
Burton. Thank you.
It's CGE Comics is what it is. CGE Comics, which I'd never heard of until this very second. And there's a ton of them. Oh my gosh, I'd be into this.
Yeah.
And by the way, Chronicles.
Yeah.
By the way, Scott, if you want to be disabused of the notion that people don't go more than 15 years between making a movie and making a sequel, you should see the list. I found a list of all of the longest time lapsed between movie and sequel. It's incredible.
By the way,
can I just say that it's not just the crossover between Snake Plissken and Jack Burton. Mm. There's one more character that gets thrown into the mix.
Please tell me. Hold on. I want to guess. Is it?
Please guess. Cause I'll bet you can guess.
Is it from that? It's that the buddy cop movie with Stallone, that character that he played.
Oh, that would be great, but no, it is Captain Ron.
Oh, shut
Captain
up.
Captain Ron, are you serious? That's stupid, but I'm kind of down with that. Wait, does Captain Ron have a patch?
Doesn't he?
It's a fake one, though. He just wears it for show.
That's right.
Because he lifted it up to look at,
That's hilarious. Somebody actually spent time, money, and effort on making a comic with those three in it. That's incredible.
Captain Ron, Jack Burton, and Snake Plissken. I don't know if there's a crossword between. So it's Snake Plissken and Captain Ron, and then Snake Plissken and Jack Burton. I don't know if all three, but there's crossovers with the first two.
All right.
I
want to hear this list that Randy has.
Yeah, I want to hear
some. Oh, it's enormous. You couldn't hear it.
Give me some prominent ones. Give me some ones we'd all know. What do you got there?
Ron?
Jungle Book 2 came out 14 years ago, and the original was 1967.
Yeah, but nobody wanted that. Got any that people wanted?
I thought it was
great. It was really good.
Yeah, no, it was.
So we've named Mad Max Fury Road. We've named Tron Legacy. Shaft comes to mind.
Yeah, but isn't that Shaft kind of a reimagining, though?
What you're talking about. Mm.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we gotta make some rules. Then it's like, does it have to star the same person in the lead?
Or is it an actual sequel?
Otherwise, it's
same,
not.
You mean
otherwise
the same
it's
actor?
Not a real sequel.
Well, hold on. No. It doesn't have to be the same actor.
I have two rules.
All right.
It can't be a reboot.
Okay.
It can't be a reboot, and it has to be the same actor, and it has to be something we want to see.
Okay, then. So for instance, Kindergarten Cop 2 came out last year, but it was Dolph Lundgren instead of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But wasn't there one in the middle with Burt Reynolds or something? Or am I thinking of Cop and a Half? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I forgot about Cop and a Half. That is a stupid movie.
Here's one that might fit your rules. The Parent Trap 2 came out in 1986. The original was 1961.
Oh, man.
And they did use some of the same people, right? Like, there were people who were in both.
Yeah, it was like Lindsay Bum. Generation. That's how that sometimes is handled. It's the chronological thing that is the rule for me. It needs to be like, after the events of the last movie is what this movie is.
How do you feel about Trainspotting 2 on this list?
Oh, I've heard.
I do want to see that.
Heard really good things about it. Really good stuff about it. So, yeah.
That's a great example, too, because that's, 90% of the same cast is involved with that. Real quick, they are working on an Escape from New York remake.
Ooh.
It was rumored or is announced in March 2007. Gerard Butler was going to be playing the role of Snake Plissken. Fans didn't approve. It sat in limbo for a while. And then as of June 2008, in June 2008, they said it was going to be Josh Brolin.
Okay.
That the project
was proceeding. They want my or old man Kurt Russell had here?
But he's old. Yeah, keep going. Who else now?
Last news on it was October of 2015. The Luther creator, Neil Cross, was announced to be writing the film script.
And we don't know.
That was almost 2 years ago.
Okay. We're almost talking 10 years ago. So Gerard Butler's probably off the list now.
I'm hoping so.
It's going to be somebody else.
I actually would like to have seen Gerard Butler during that time period. I think it would have been good.
Oh, that'd have been great. But today, I don't know. I want somebody new and fresh and whatever. I'm super jazzed that you found that. I'm so excited now that might
we'd have to.
Josh Brolin kind of gives me hope for it too.
Yeah. He's getting a little old too, a little long in the tooth. He may not work.
Yeah, but you don't have to be a young guy to be Snake Plissken, I don't think. I think that old, tough, former war hero.
Yeah, everybody knows your name.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Like Cheers. Anyway, Randy.
George Wendt is
George Wendt has Snake. Oh my lord. That's a great idea.
I just want to say again, the list of long time lapsed between sequels is an enormous list of films. It's way more movies than you'd ever guess. And a lot of them are just bad ideas. Things like Dumb and Dumber 2 Rambo 4 was 19 years after Rambo 3.
Wow.
And
Rocky Balboa, right? Like
another long one.
Balboa,
That sort of thing. Independence Day Resurgence. It was almost 20 years, really close to 20 years after Independence Day.
Yeah.
And like this just goes on and on. My favorite is the gap between Superman 4 and Superman Returns, which is 18 almost 19 years. Just because it's like you feel like for the first 15 of those years, there's no way this is going to happen.
That doesn't meet two of Dunaway's criteria. Well, it didn't have any of the same actors, and nobody wanted to see it.
No, that's true, but it does have one of the criteria, but it's also a little bit screwy because it's actually longer if you go by what they say. They say that this is a direct sequel, or that was a direct sequel to Superman 2, and that 3 and 4 canon didn't exist. So technically, Superman 2 is the last time that had a prequel.
Interesting.
And then Returns is the sequel to that, so it's actually longer than that, which is weird to. I mean, that's obviously I'm splitting hairs, but that's a funny way to look at it.
How do you feel about the Ed Helms National Lampoon's Vacation from 2 years ago?
Yeah, that's
enjoyed
sequel, it for sure.
Sure, that's a sequel. Yeah, because they're all older.
Does it fit your rules here? Because it was also 19 years between.
It was a different actor, but that actor was played by so many different.
Yeah, there was never the same. There was never the same Rusty.
You still have Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah,
right.
It's consistent because every Rusty was different, so they're consistent with the Rusty for sure.
So before we just to wrap this up,
with the Rusty.
as you might guess if you thought about it, the top two are both Disney movies. The time between Fantasia and Fantasia 2000. Is 59 years.
Jeez.
Which is hilarious because Disney wanted to do it like every couple of years.
Yeah. Wanted that to
miss
be
a few in between.
Yeah, yeah.
Can that really be considered a sequel though when it's just it's an anthology piece. It's not like the continuing adventures Mickey and all those brooms.
Then I'll tell you the longest time, also Disney film, is 63 years. Guess which movie?
I'm looking at the list, so I can't.
Hold on, 63 years. No, 63 years. You say?
Yeah. Okay. 63 years between movie and movie part two.
Wow. I don't know.
There's a pretty big difference between the Rescuers, but it wasn't that long.
No, not even close to that. Is it? Can you tell us? Let's just do a couple hints here. Real live action or animated?
Animated Disney.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit.
It's
got to be Disney.
And one more hint.
Yeah.
The 63-year difference between the original and the sequel is four times the lifespan of this animal.
Is it Bambi 2?
Yes.
Is it really?
Yes.
That is funny. I didn't even know there was a Bambi 2.
I didn't either. I had no idea we had a sequel to Bambi.
They had to, Brian Ippett, they had to keep starting over because Bambi would die on them before they could finish the second movie.
That is hilarious.
That's hilarious. I didn't know you knew
I remember when there was a big fire.
How do you know the average life of a deer? How's that knowledge?
I looked it up okay. Once I saw this list.
I was really impressed with that.
Once Randy started asking the question, I'm like, I'm going to find out what the, you know, how many times over Bambi would have died.
That's hilarious to me. All right, let's see.
And Disney is all about this, by the way, this list. They're all over the top 20. There's Winnie the Pooh following The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh by 34 years. Yep, there's Jungle Book 2 following The Jungle Book by 35 years. It's just
That's not even the live action recent one.
It's not even counting the ones that are just direct to video, right? Yeah. Like 101 Dalmatians 2 and Lady and the Tramp 2.
Yeah. But I mean, in the Jungle Book case, you're talking about the two animated ones that were so far apart, not even this new one, right?
Right.
Okay. Right. Wow. That's crazy. By the way,
go ahead.
I got a couple pieces of trivia here. This, the city that they used here for Snake, by the way, him onto the top of the Twin Towers and the lady crashing her terrorist plane, or she took over Air Force One and crashed it into New York and all that kind of stuff. That was all kind of hard to watch. Hard to watch.
Especially crashing into the World Trade Center, like in her case.
Yeah. Like
she didn't actually crash the World Trade Center, right?
I thought it was one of the World Trade Center towers that she, because they showed the little dotted line going down the gullet of the building.
Can you guys explain? I just don't know enough about animation. Can you explain to me the first shot with the helicopter flying past Brooklyn Bridge? What? How do you make that it looks so awful?
I was really curious about that myself because it was unique.
$6 million,
right? It was totally unique. I couldn't tell if it was miniatures or if it was if it was partially matting or if it was both or if it was I don't know. I'd be interesting to see how they got the shot because the shot looks like crap, but it told me where I needed to be. It gave me the information I needed to know, and it was really interesting, Scott.
Yeah, if you can but that's what makes it interesting to me is it's impossible to explain. Like it does, I don't know how they did it because it's not just a simple saying. Oh yeah, that's a model on a bad piece of film behind it, or that's a matte painting, or none of those things apply. I don't know what he did, but I kind of like that. I like that there's some weird ass cheap practical effects going on that you can't. That today would be, you just fly a drone over that is what you do today. It's like no big deal.
Yeah.
But how can you I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I do like what they did with the flight stuff with the, what looks like CGI or like computer graphic modeling, but really was them making a model of Manhattan, painting the whole thing black and then putting fluorescent tape on the edges of the buildings and then flying over that. I thought that was
that's really cool. In fact, as I watched it, I didn't know this till after the movie because I looked it up later, but as I watched, I went, oh, wireframe computer generated stuff. I didn't know they could do that in 82. That's pretty impressive. And then I watched the movie and thought, all right, and then forgot all about it. Then I looked it up. Nope. That was black practical buildings with
glow in the dark tape on it. One of you guys was saying earlier about you felt like it was a student film almost, and that's kind of how Carpenter has always worked. He is not afraid to take a chance on a low budget solution that looks sometimes fantastic, sometimes fails.
You get the feeling that even years after Star Wars Episode IV, he doesn't want to do that kind of thing. Like he would rather something look worse than look like something that came before.
Yeah. No, yes. You're right.
Very unique vision.
I think that's true. And it's never hard to tell a Carpenter movie. You can just see it. There's something in there. There's a texture to it. It may be a cheap texture sometimes, but it's totally him, and you never question who's making this damn thing. And the same with, They Live. Like, how many of his movies have we seen We've seen They Live.
We've seen They Live. We haven't seen The Fog yet, but I really want to. We've seen The Thing.
Yeah.
Big Trouble. We've seen that.
Yeah.
And Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
And then this one, I think that's it.
We haven't done any of his Halloween movies yet. We should sometime.
Yeah.
We do need to, yeah.
But there's something I'm thinking of here. Let's go, director.
Didn't we watch Prince of Darkness?
Yes, that's the one. That's
the one. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, the devil one, Prince of Darkness. I remember. 87's Prince of Darkness, we absolutely did. That's the had the priest and the stuff and the whatnot in it. That was all thing.
The priest and the stuff and the whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Film Sack episode 159, to be specific.
Yeah.
Right.
We really see Ghost of Mars sometime just to wallow in the
I'm interested. I don't think I've ever seen Ghost of Mars, and I've always heard bad things, but I don't know.
Oh, it's now, awful.
How many... we get to bookend, it would be really cool to bookend all the John Carpenter films because we're watching the first one, and then we need to watch the last one.
Yeah.
How many times have we seen Lee Van Cleef?
No kidding.
Twice.
Oh, that's a good question.
Twice, right?
Right. Twice. I was trying to remember which ones. I know we've seen him in plenty of things. I just couldn't remember.
I always see him and I'm like, oh, we saw him in Django or like that kind of movie.
Yeah.
He belongs in that kind of movie.
Well, he's in Quick and the Dead. The what's this? The old not Pale Rider.
Yeah.
The other hole
in the roof. What?
No, the famous Clint Eastwood Western that. The spaghetti western that everybody refers
to. The man
who
shot Liberty Valance.
No, it's not it.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, he's in that, yes. But yes, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
The West was one.
Because
okay.
The Good, Bad, and the Ugly is the one where they have that scene where the three of them are staring each other down and people make gifts all the time with like a third one with a puppy or something. It's that scene I always think of when I think of Lee Van Cleef. Here, apparently in future 1997, dudes who are in charge of really important state prisons wear some pretty sweet earrings, man. That guy had some,
There was a little. Everybody was wearing in 1998, according to 1981. Everybody is going to be wearing, you know, like punk rock leather bands with studs in them and earrings. It's interesting.
Yeah, I can't believe we haven't talked about that the Billy Idol hair scare dude yet either.
Oh, Buscemi's evil older
clone,
brother, right?
By the way, I forgot to mention this. Sorry. We were talking about ages of directors earlier, and we were talking about Spielberg being 70 and still rocking it. And I think Randy's point holds true about him having a corporation around himself that makes things move. But Carpenter's actually a year younger than him. He's only 69. So if he just had the corporation part, he could be making movies more.
Well, and the problem is he doesn't have any sort of like any sort of history that you would bank a film director on after, you know, the year 2000, right? So, like, you don't look at John Carpenter and go, well, I mean, we're going to give him a chance because this is the guy who made Chariots of Fire. You know what I mean?
Has it ever stopped John Carpenter, though?
Yes, apparently.
Yeah, Ghost of Mars stopped him. It stopped him in his tracks in 2001. He made Ghost of Mars. It tanked on every level, and he said, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to make movies.
I guarantee there's some Canadian right now who will give him some money to make a movie.
Maybe. Why a Canadian, exactly? What would be?
I don't know. I think that's where he got his start. I think he had some Canadian investors.
Here's how it'll happen. He'll executive produce the reboot, the eventual reboot of Escape from New York. Then he'll be brought back to direct something. It won't be very good. And then
produce with Rob Zombie's Halloween version? By the way, Halloween has a great history of remakes and
To me, that's true. Although the Rob Zombie stuff's pretty bad, I think. But the like, what was the one called? They brought Jamie Lee Curtis back.
H2O.
Yeah, that's I like H2O. That.
Was it H2O?
Yeah, I like that movie.
Well, it was H2O. Yeah, because it was 20 years after the first Halloween,
that's
think, right?
That's yeah,
right.
That's who right. made that?
And they drank water while they made the film.
Was right. that?
We're supposed to be getting a David Gordon Green Halloween in the near future.
David that Gordon is, Green Halloween.
Yeah.
That is executive produced by John Carpenter. So he's still working.
Okay.
Right, right.
All
right.
Well, that's good to know. I'm trying to see, did he do that? He didn't do the 2.0 thing, did he? Or H2O?
No, I think that was, who
he
was that?
Producer.
That was one of those MTV guys.
Yeah.
That,
was,
used to make all the videos.
Steve Miner was the director for that one.
Okay. Okay.
Steve Miner, also known the guy who did Friday the 13th Part 2, Lake Placid, and Forever Young.
Oh.
Lake Flaccid.
Sorry, Mel Gibson. Lake Flaccid, yes.
Yeah. Lake Flaccid, tiny wiener. Hey, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing I was going to say about Jamie Lee Curtis before I forget. She she did the intro here in this movie. She was the voice.
Yeah. Which is cool.
It blew my mind.
We heard her at the very beginning of this episode, Film Sack.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And she doesn't
get
credit. I
thought you were dead.
She, what?
She died in Halloween. Didn't
oh
she?
Yeah, she doesn't think
she
met the actor.
Came back.
It's like, no, she goes to BlizzCon with her kid and dresses up in cosplay and stuff. She's great.
I want to do one more thing before we get off of John Carpenter, because we really should
get off John Carpenter.
And that is where do we all stand on his three best movies? Like, what is his legacy best movie among the three in your opinion?
Legacy or favorites? Because that's a big difference.
No, I mean when he dies.
Most impactful.
Yeah.
And the Oscars put up a clip from a film
that makes
you think, wow, John Carpenter made that. Is it from The Thing? Is it from They Live? Or is it from Big Trouble?
Right. It's the Petri dish scene from The Thing.
Yeah.
I think that'll be definitely, Assault on Precinct 13, he's gotten a lot of kudos over the last.
Oh, there's a remake
years.
Too,
it,
by
it
the
did,
way.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right. Yeah. It didn't do that well at the theater here in the U.S., but going back, people really love it, especially in the industry. The Thing,
Can I get you to agree that the movie that gets mentioned the most as being sort of seminal or producing people's, new young film directors is They Live? Like, They Live is his more magnum opus for the form.
Sure.
It's my favorite, but I don't know I don't know if they would show that at the.
Here are the three things they show. I know exactly what they show. Here are the three things. They show Halloween. Here are the four things they show.
Gotta show Halloween.
They're going to show Halloween. They're going to show Snake Plissken in some form. Mm-hmm. They're going to show something with They Live. And they're going to show absolutely something from The Thing. The problem with The Thing is The Thing The Thing is just an excellent monster horror movie. It's incredibly well made in lots of ways. And it's kind of alien-like in terms of its quality. I think I'd put it right up there with the original Alien. I love it. But I don't know that it's like, there's no faces in it or anything in it where you're like, oh yeah, The Thing, remember that, except for like Spiderhead, and they're not going to show that at the Oscars.
Right.
So it's going to be a hard one, but I still think it's his best movie. So for me, it's going to be those four, and they're all pretty iconic, and I think they may end it with Michael Myers and the Halloween thing and with that music, because it's just,
oh, that would be awesome.
It's permanently part of movie history. Like, he's got one of the great slasher horror legacies ever. Horror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not horror. Not horror like,
Horror Legacy.
Maybe he does.
That's another movie we're looking forward to. Horror Legacy.
Totally. What else? We talked about that.
I enjoyed Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, he's fine. Yeah. I like him when he's old and weird, though. He's okay in this, but I like him in movies.
He always looks old and weird. Come on. Like, even when he's young, he looks old and weird.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong, but he has like there's a weird, like, he's shutting down, I don't want to talk to anybody kind of quality to his newer things, where he just looks like a cranky old bastard. Like in True Love,
True Romance? Love?
No, the TV True show Romance. On HBO. Love,
not
Big
even,
Love, Big
not
Love,
even
Big Love.
True Love. That just Big Love.
Big Love.
Yeah, Big Love. Yes. He played the leader of the thing there, the compound, and he was amazing in that. Yeah, yeah, really scary. Really, really good. So, I don't know. I like me some Harry Dean Stanton in this one. He felt like a little bit of a wet noodle, but it's fine. He's fine. Do you guys like Chef in this? Chef was in this from South Park.
Isaac Hayes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was my whole intro.
Yeah, it was good, by the way. It was really good. I always think that song is not him. I always think that's... I get him in... This is terrible, but I get him in the... Who's the other guy?
Barry White.
Barry White.
Don't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Barry White.
That's common. Just because they, both came out around the same time. Very deep baritone voices singing songs about doing it.
which is the weird part, right? Because now you know of Isaac Hayes as someone who kind of found Jesus.
Well, he found... didn't he?
Did any of you guys get lucky to some Isaac Hayes music? I mean...
No.
I don't
know.
Not our generation, dude.
I was the wrong generation for that business.
We are old. We are not that old, man. Not quite. But he
that's
wasn't
a great
he,
prom date audio I'd love to hear.
His thing was Scientology, I thought, wasn't it? Because he quit South Park.
Yeah,
because they made fun of Scientology and he got pissed and left, and then they were all mad at him because he would constantly make fun of, or the show was making fun of every religion equally, and they were like, well, you're being a hypocrite because you can't handle it when it's yours or whatever, and
Do we think that Isaac Hayes is actually totally chill and it's just the cult that is controlling him?
Well, he is now because he's dead.
Do we think he really is a true believer?
Since he's dead now, I think nobody's controlling him. I think he's out.
I can't imagine.
No, I'm talking about when that happens, when that all goes down.
Oh, I don't know.
It does seem weird. I mean, it does seem like feels out of character for how chill he appeared to be, and then to latch onto a religion like Scientology and then make it determine his decisions and stuff like that. It does seem to go against the whole like sunglasses, shirtless playing piano, chill dude.
Yeah. I guess what it says to us, the lesson is all that stuff's bullshit and nobody should listen to singers or actors because it's all right. Facades and smoke and mirrors anyway. That's what I take away from that.
By the way, dude had 12 children.
Oh
he
my
was,
gosh.
He was getting it onto his own music.
Wow. Really?
Nope.
How many women made the 12?
Let's see here.
12.
I was hoping you'd say 13 or something funny.
Nancy Hayes, Emily Ruth Watson.
Oh, wow. Might be 12.
Minion Harley. Ajawa.
Wow.
You're making up.
No, these are names listed in
this sounds like a password generator.
It looks like four it looks like married and involved with four women. Well, married to four women, but it looks like two of them produce most of the children. Like
married, fully involved.
Like four and seven or something.
Four and six. Yeah, it looks like that. Like Vincent and Eric Hayes, Melanie Mia Hayes, Nicole A. Hayes. Came from one wife, and then Veronica, Felicia, Melanie, Nikki, Lily, Darius, and Vincent, and
that was
Heather.
That was just one girl.
That was just really long.
Wow, he got around. That guy, he got it going on there. Wow. All right.
When he sings about love, he's the one to listen to.
Yeah, gotcha. That's right. Yeah, he knows where the wiener goes, is what we're saying.
Yeah, he knows where the wiener goes.
Isaac Hayes knows where the wiener goes.
That's right.
Bumper stickers available at filmsack.com.
Exactly. Any other thoughts before we dive into clips, I wonder?
We hadn't even done tropes or anything else. Were there tropes?
I don't know.
Yes.
Trivia?
This was nothing but.
Yeah.
Right.
Probably the thing that really stuck out to me, I was thinking through these tropes, like what other movies, is the we kidnapped the president story.
Right.
Like, just because I couldn't come up with a good example of well before this, right? Like,
yeah, right.
There's a lot of we kidnapped the whatever since this movie. But this movie makes it somehow feel a bit fresh.
Well, that's interesting.
You're right.
I wonder if there wasn't much of that back in the day. But, you know, Air Force One and those kinds of things kind of owe their legacy to whatever that trope is. And maybe it began here. I don't know. Like, I think, by the way, Donald Pleasant's worst president ever. I freaking can't stand him in the role. I think he's bad.
Oh, right.
And yes. I don't think you're supposed to, because the first thing he says is like, God save me and good luck, guys.
Yeah.
And he runs and gets in his big red egg.
His prezipod, yeah.
What was the deal with the president in general? Like, can someone explain the end of this movie to me?
Mm. You mean
what does the president do at the end there?
He is comforting the nation. Right after he gets shaved.
Yeah, it's basically a peace treaty with Russia and kind of a peace offering of all these nuclear the recipe for nuclear power on this cassette tape.
Yeah,
on this Maxell 60-minute
no
case.
Yeah.
I freaked out. That's the thing that freaked me out the most, walking around with a cassette tape that's not in its case.
Oh, I know. Yeah, all I can think about is that's not going to play right, you guys. It's going to get stuck, sticky, and all the tape's going to come out.
Don't you miss the days of somebody destroying a tape by pulling the reel out?
No.
I don't miss those days.
I need to wind this back in.
Oh, it was the worst. It was all wrinkly sounding.
I also don't miss the days of a CD getting scratched on the wrong side.
Oh, yeah.
You just snap those in movies. You go snap, which is almost near impossible if you ever tried to snap a CD. It's like,
No, I have embraced my digital future and present in a way that makes me glad all those things are no longer part of my life. But
it's funny, we were talking about this on Soundography yesterday, but not only do you know your music, you know your bands you like and stuff like that, but you also know the glitches with every single different type of recording system, right? Like, you know what it sounds like when a tape drops out, you know what it sounds like when a record skips, when a CD does that ding 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 like over and over thing again.
Yep.
It's just funny how we've also adopted all the flaws in our music delivery.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. But yeah, Pleasance, forget it. Yeah. Not the right
way
guy
better as a Bond villain.
Yeah, he's right. Cool. Like, there's nothing, that guy's been around. In fact, he was
or as a Halloween villain.
Yeah. He was captured and tortured in World War II, and to see him captured and tortured here, that must have been interesting. Just from a perspective from a guy who had actually been captured and tortured. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of weird, but yeah, I didn't buy it. But the thing at the end, Brian or Randy, to answer your question, was him trying to be all presidential and calm the country down and reassure everyone, and then Plissken putting jazz swing music in the player so that it was completely discordant with what the president was saying. I think that's just it. I think that was all mm-hmm. that was.
Right. I wanted there to be more of like a twist or a story element at the very end.
Yeah.
And right. Like I had these expectations, you know, like that the president had, I don't know, been turned by the criminals or something, and it just didn't. Oh. I don't know. There was nothing.
Yeah,
there.
Use that for the reboot. That's a great. That's a great twist.
What was the deal with the new one? They had an EMP and it shut everything down or something in LA, or what was the deal?
Right,
I forget how that started.
Oh my God, it's been years since we watched.
I have blacked out any memory of that movie.
and speaking of tropes, can we all just agree that no universe that we're living in would have free people give an entire area to like criminals? Like,
they didn't give it. It became such a rat infested hole that we locked it out, right? Isn't that the idea?
Yeah. Well, no, so yeah, they just said, here's a thing that's relatively isolated because of the water, and
but
and
you're
just,
sending
you know,
criminals there, and like, here, have a city. Like,
well,
that
this
would
was,
never
well,
happen.
But no, but during 81, we were at the height of there was a huge increase in violence in New York during the early 80s. And he was playing on the idea that it was going to continue to get exponentially worse until it was basically a prison island. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, if you were good people, you just left the city. And then they just walled it off.
Walled it off and said, yeah, whoever's already in here deserves to be in here. And anyone who goes to jail now goes in here. And you just
right. It's
kind
of like the idea of when we, you know, kind of the idea of, the, you know, blocking off half of Germany. If you're on that side, yes, you're just a victim of whatever goes on over there. And you're a victim to that policy.
But yeah. East Germany was a compromise and kind of a gift.
Right.
Like, I'm just saying, in any reality where we have too many criminals to deal with, Jeff Sessions just going to kill them. We're not gonna give them Manhattan.
Sure,
ever.
In 2017, but in the early 80s, you know, right. Bye, New York.
Yeah, so. I think that they. I mean, I like the idea. I just, practically, it just doesn't work. Like that sort of stuff never. Right. I mean, gentrification, maybe that didn't exist yet in mm-hmm. the minds of people, but you know, New York was about to go through the greatest gentrification of any major city in the world, and it did, and it's now like one of the safest cities in America of that, and certainly of that size.
Right, right.
And that, if you'd have said that in the late 70s, like, oh yeah, one day New York will be really safe and tourism will be huge and all this, people would be like, whatever, dude, no way.
Worst place ever.
I'm getting out of here. Like, I think they just didn't know. Also, it's one of these cases, like this is a trope where you're making your movie and you're like, hey, why don't we set it in the far flung future of 1997?
Yeah.
No, do longer. Have it way further than that, because you're going to get there.
It creates a little bit more right. Like imminent danger. Like, oh my God, this is in my lifetime. It's going to be like this. Oh gosh. As opposed to, I'm never going to see this. You know, never going to see a future that looks like this.
My preferred way is to say, in not the too distant future. And then you're done. You
and
don't have
leave
to
it open ended.
Yeah. You don't have to explain yourself. You just do it.
Thanks, Cameron.
You know,
next Sunday AD. Okay.
Right.
By the way, all right, before we get off of Donald Pleasance, I know we already kind of got off of him. Not off Man. On him, but anyway, Donald Pleasance, I got to read his little bio in IMDb, and I don't know who wrote this, but goodness gracious, here's the description. Balding, quiet spoken, of slight build and possessed of piercing blue eyes, often peering out behind round steel rim glasses, Donald Pleasance had the necessary physical attributes which made him a great screen villain. In the course of his lengthy career, he relished playing the obsessed and paranoid and the purely evil.
That's okay, weird. So that was written by, like, his daughter,
must
right?
be,
like,
must
you,
be.
You just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was born in 1919, died in 95, and lived
right.
in peace.
Born in England.
Yeah, he's an English dude. Well, you can always, he doesn't do
this. This feels like one of the only times you don't hear his English accent. You hear it come through. There's times he's trying to sound Southern, and maybe he's trying to through the whole movie, and it's just only comes out a couple times during the during the film. But it's really, really weird.
He was
the number one top dog. A1, number one.
He was supposed to be Blair in The Thing, but because of a scheduling conflict, it went to Wilford Brimley instead.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it seems like glad that worked out okay.
Hey, we didn't talk about Adrienne Bordeaux at all. She was the sex pot in this one, walking around with her boobs all out. And if you weren't convinced that she was supposed to be...
Not as much out as when we saw her before.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
True story. And if you weren't sure of that, then how about refer to the scene where she's stroking that gun like it's a member.
Like it's a wiener.
It was quite straight up.
Yeah.
Of course.
We saw her before in Swamp Thing, which was...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, man, that's a real old one.
Yeah. Jeez. She'd still get that hair, that weird solid hair.
fro.
Adrienne Barbeau. Now, she's the one I always get confused thinking she was originally Captain Janeway for Voyager. And I get her confused with the other French. There's a French actress who was supposed to be Janeway, and then they filmed the pilot, and then they got rid of her and brought in what's her name?
We saw in that Horror of Hell House, right? It's
I think you're right. Yeah. That's her, and I always mix them up. I did.
She was just nominated for an Oscar. Right. Her name is
Eugene Von
Vince McGillicuddy.
That was going to happen now. If there was any hope.
She's in Star Trek. She's one of our connections. She was an episode of DS9. Yeah, but she's not the one I'm thinking of. But she has what I refer to as solid hair. She has rock solid hair. Her hair is, and I don't mean, oh man, she got some great hair. No. I mean, it's like a piece of, it's like chicken wire. It's just like this weird helmet. And she has that in
which
this
is
movie
too bad
well.
Because Snake has great feathered hair, which was just beautiful and flowing.
He has great
Jean-Pierre Bougeot.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
yeah.
Speak French to me again. were you guys even kind of curious about how far that snake tattoo goes down?
Kind of, a little bit. It's circling
an
his extension taint kind of thing.
Yeah, isn't an extension of his manhood?
I thought it was a number two, and they had tattooed him at the place to say you're number two. I really did.
If you could tat a number a poo on my on my stomach, that'd just be.
I was sure it was a two, and every time I saw it, I went, "Oh, he's number two. He must be the second one out to do the fighting in an arena fight, you know." And I really didn't think about it until later. I went, "Oh, it's a freaking tattoo of a snake." Gosh dang it.
Right.
Shouldn't have made it look too.
By the way, I think I was getting Jean-Pierre Bougeot and Isabelle Huppert, who was the recent nominee for Best Actress, confused.
See, you're doing it on that end. I'm doing it on the other end. There's no way to get these women straight. They're all mixed up.
Oh, gosh. And then we're French in a movie women look alike.
And she was married to John Carpenter at the time of this, right? Adrienne Bardot or Barbeau and him were
was she really?
Hitched.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why she's in a lot of his movies. So.
Right. And so did you guys, in the arena fight, round one is wooden baseball bats. Round two is trash can lids and baseball bats with the nails in them.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
What was round three going to be? Any guesses? How do you escalate?
I'm hoping round three.
Swimming pool noodles.
Round three, 16 other people come out and they play ball.
Okay. Right. Man, that guy took a bat to the back of the head. Like,
right.
That was great. Was nice. I love that scene.
Whenever they bring out these big, heavy set, muscular dudes with really always really goofy facial hair. It's like the guy that Indiana Jones fights on the tarmac in Raiders, shirtless dude with the goofy handlebar mustache.
Yeah, the German. Yeah, I love that.
The German, right, exactly. Whenever they bring those guys out, it's like, all right, that guy's really, really big and really tough looking, but he's so slow, he telegraphs every attack he's going to do on you. Like, I'm going to swing the baseball bat back, and then I'm going to try to bring it down on you.
And played so well in The Princess Bride.
Why is it always that guy's last fight, like in these movies? Because he's been fighting for like 8 years and he's never lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Our hero comes along for the guy, the giant's last fight. I don't get that.
Pure intimidation.
but that is tropey as hell. That's everywhere. That's David and Goliath. I feel like every movie, every movie, if there's a fight to be had, it's this overwhelming odds. How can I beat this guy? You know, it's Rocky four is with Drago, right? Yeah. It's like that. Right. It's that whole thing. And you're always going to have it. It's never going to go away. It's in Star Wars even. Like, it's like Luke versus the Rancor. The Rancor's never lost. He's eaten a million pigs, right? He's just a big fat Rancor, never loses a fight. And then Luke comes down, puts a bone in his mouth, and gets him shut in the door.
And that's why the best thing in that movie is when the keeper of the beast is like saddened, you know?
Oh, because good point. Good point.
It's such a totally like human moment in your space fantasy thing.
I think he meant it as a joke, but I think you're right. It kind of comes off as a kid. It came off to me like, oh man, that meant something to that guy. I think nowadays, I don't think George Lucas was thinking of that, but it worked that way. Like a lot of things George Lucas made, it totally worked, but he didn't mean it to.
I hope George Lucas planned that to be like a real moment and it got out of hand or something, because I really like that.
I hope so too. I hope a lot of things about George Lucas, but anyway.
So do we still think that an egg-shaped pod is the safest thing to put somebody in? I mean, we believed it really heavily during the late 70s, but I haven't seen the pod technology really take off.
I mean, it was all cushiony in there. It was all like, you know, had like, I don't know if you call it upholstery, but it was like all soft in there. Maybe that's enough to save you. I don't know.
No way. No way.
Maybe not. Yeah.
We believed it, but no.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, how could we, like, just go to an amusement park and imagine one of the things you're in flying off the ride. Like,
just drop an egg on the floor.
I've got a seatbelt that's held together with a tiny piece of tin.
Yeah,
come on,
exactly.
I'm going to be just fine.
Yeah, you'll be all right. But this idea that we didn't understand how physics worked, and if you threw something at 100 miles an hour toward a hard object, it doesn't matter how soft it is in there. Your organs are all going to go flying to the left and be destroyed.
Yeah, unless you've got a president-shaped... like, yeah, exactly. Like a president shaped cushion in there. Mm-hmm. It's perfectly molded to his body shape. Yeah. So there's nowhere for him to go.
It'd have to be a bigger pod. Like, put him in the center of a much larger surrounding and maybe you'd be okay.
Oh, right. And then the pod like has room to bounce around inside the larger pod or get absorb the shock from the larger pod.
Now, I agree obviously that it's nonsense, but I hope that Air Force One has like Plan J, and it's something like the president has this amazing parachute strapped to him and he's kicked off the plane.
Do you hope that's true right now, or do you hope that's true? Okay.
I hope that's true in 4 to 8 years.
Okay. All right. See, folks at home, this is as political as we ever get, so just be happy. I'm glad.
Right. Hey, exactly. this is a political movie.
It sure is.
A lot of politics.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason it works is it plays on this idea of power run amok and authoritarian whatever. And, you know, here's what I can... I have a prediction over the next couple of years, probably next 4 to 8 years. We are going to be inundated with these kinds of ideas. Like, we're going to have... I'm not saying one way or the other whether it's justified or not, but this is what we do creatively as humans. We start to tell stories that deal with specific fears, and... whether it's Cold War 80s movies or it's, 2000s terrorist threats, or if it's whatever it is, we end up making a ton of entertainment about it. And I think we're looking at a lot of like post-apocalyptic. I mean, Handmaid's Tales on Hulu this weekend.
Yeah,
that thing's like the 60s that was written. And suddenly that's all new again. Amazon's top-selling book is 1984 by, not Orwell. What's his name?
George Orwell.
Like, that's crazy. Like, why is that happening? Well, you know, just look around you.
That's based on that Apple ad, right?
Yeah. Right. Where she chucks the hammer in that thing. Or, they based the book on the Apple ad.
By the way, since you brought it up, I want to say to the audience, because we got some compliments, I guess, on our audiobook chat last week or a couple weeks ago. The Handmaid's Tale is a highly stylized, almost poetic novel.
Yeah.
If you read it, it is not like prose. It is it is not like most other books. Margaret Atwood put a lot of thought into the artistic stylings of the words. There is an audiobook for it that's narrated by Claire Danes, and it's fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah.
And you should listen to it before you watch the TV show. My opinion.
I've read it. I haven't heard the audiobook, but it's really good and totally holds up. Doesn't feel like it was written in the 60s. So people should check it out.
Right.
I'm gonna watch that pilot and see how it looks. It's got a great cast. Looks like it's it could be awesome. Good stuff. So who knows?
Elizabeth, what's her face? Peggy from Mad Men. She looks.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like she's gonna be great in it.
Yeah, she was president's daughter on West Wing. Can't think of her name on there. Not Peggy.
Oh, let's talk about the West Wing.
Yeah, and she looks like my aunt. She looks like my aunt, which is always weird.
Like your aunt.
Yeah. Like my aunt. So my aunt when she was younger is the spitting image of Mad Men version of Peggy. Just take a picture of both of them, put them side by side. Like, oh my gosh, Aunt Phyllis, what the hell's going on here? Anyway,
so Dunaway pointed out that this is a very political movie, Escape from New York. What's the politics theme of this film, in your opinion?
Oh, right. Leaders suck.
And, leaders? Leaders
in general.
Yeah, they just suck.
Yeah.
Suck it.
This was like 80.
And this is very anti-establishment is what we're basically saying.
But it's also very, it's very Cold War. It's very like, remember Leningrad and all these fake wars between, you know, the U.S. and America are talked about in the movie. And this is really in the thick of that for sure. I mean, that Russian stuff, we forget just how hardcore that was. We may be entering a new era of that. But back then it was like so... Everything was Russian. Russians were the enemy in every book and every movie and every TV show. Like it was just, you know, piled on.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you mean, Scott? Like we're about to get Rusky fever again?
I do. I think we are going to. I think it's going to get weird. I think we might. Well, it kind of depends. It's all about where the propaganda takes us. Like, are we going to be, will it be Rusky fever again? Will it be North Korea fever again? Will it be a combination of those with a nice smattering of ISIS? Like, I don't know. Like, it's weird, but you'll see it in our entertainment. I'm sure of that. It's even if it's kind of subconscious or whatever, we're just always, it's always there. And it's always a snapshot of the time you're in. And I'm actually really curious about where it goes from here. Assuming we don't get annihilated. If that happens, then there's no movies. It's all puppet shows.
That's right. Yeah.
It's shadow puppets in caves at that point. That's what we're
doing. Right.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Yeah. It's going to be awesome, dude. Can't wait for starring my shadow puppet cave future. Starring who? Who are you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say Kurt Russell. Oh. a real snake.
Yeah. An actual snake.
Right. An actual snake.
Snake.
Don't call me Snake.
Yep.
It's Plissken.
It's Plissken.
One last thing. Yep. Wardrobe choices. Yeah. In this movie, I wasn't aware there were camo yoga pants in the day.
Yeah.
Those camo yoga pants were interesting. I'm down with that. Tank top. Was that ever a thing?
No.
The special made?
No. No one ever wore that.
Maybe for Halloween. No, it's the future they're going to wear it.
Yeah.
Right.
You'll see a cosplay.
1997.
Yeah. I feel like you got to give some props to this movie for the wardrobe looking somewhat futuristic and correctly dingy without looking, you know, like the Warriors, like silly.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not too bad. The guy with the hair that looked like Buscemi's brother, that was weird.
I loved every scene he showed up in.
Yeah.
It was fun though.
Yeah. He was weird. He's Salacious Crumb.
His dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I may have captured that.
I hope you did.
I sure did. Yeah. I sure did. In fact, let's dive in. I've got some clips here today. These are all very enjoyable, I believe. And it begins with this one, referring to people still using Telex in 97. So here you go.
You have the code.
There's no David 14 on the computer.
Unlisted.
Unregistered code. We Telex Washington. Still waiting for a reply.
Telex. What is this? The 40s? Come on.
On the computer.
The computer. We can't find it on the computer. Yeah, the internet would have been. I mean, no one predicted the internet. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, 97. I mean, we were in it. We were in it to win it. I was getting MP3s that year. let's see. Van Cleef to Snake.
S.D. Plissken, American, Lieutenant, Special Forces Unit Black Light. Two Purple Hearts, Leningrad and Siberia. Youngest man to be decorated by the President. He robbed the Federal Reserve Depository. Life sentence, New York Maximum Security Penitentiary. I'm ready to kick your ass out of the world, war hero.
Ooh, gee.
That setup, that was enough. Yeah, that was enough information to write an entire comic series.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We just got enough backstory there for everything we need.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see the heist of the... I wonder if the, that's in the comics.
I wonder if that gets covered in... Yeah, it would be cool if it does.
That'd be really cool. All right, here's... What? I don't know what this is.
President of what? That's not funny, Pliskin.
Oh.
not my president.
Exactly right. Not my president.
I didn't vote for him. I voted for the other guy. Let's see. Give me... What?
Doesn't mean shit to me. Give me the paper.
Oh, all right. This is his voice the whole time. He says in some interviews that his character was based on a combination of Clint Eastwood and the Duke. Not the Duke from this movie, but...
the rapping Duke from that song.
No,
that's...
The impacted, fecal matter Duke. What's his name?
John Wayne.
I get it.
Fecal matter Duke. Oh, yeah, because he had the impacted.
The rumor of the impacted fecal matter, and I don't think it was ever true.
But Scott, what you just said, he said something about his character. You mean his character in every movie, right?
Most movies. I mean, the guy. I think he's one of the more accomplished actors these days. But in the 80s and 90s, this was it. You're right. That's all he did.
It was a lot lighter in the Escape from L.A. It wasn't nearly as brooding in L.A.
That's true. But like, watch something like Miracle these days, or that recent Deepwater Horizon movie. He's great. Mm. Man, he's good.
Yeah,
he's real.
He's found his way.
Yeah, he's not only found his way, but I think he's, I don't know, I think he's of his generation. Okay. He's one of the most.
He's come a long way since Computer with Tennis Shoes.
Yeah.
In the action films that Kurt Russell made in his 30s, every line he delivers, he may as well be saying, "I'm Batman."
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, because it's all hissing, that low.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I think that's all very true. All of that's very true.
Call me Pliskin.
Here's, oh yeah, he does. He says this.
Pliskin? Pliskin, what are you doing?
I love it. He just kept saying his name. Such a shitty last name, too.
Pliskin,
a horrible name.
I know you can hear me.
Pliskin. Here's his answer.
Playing with myself. I'm going in.
All right, great.
Okay.
Himself. That's great.
Sarcastic.
When this sound, there's two times in the movie a sound happened that made me jump. Here's one of them. And that's when he was standing in the street and somebody ran in the background. Actually got me.
Jumped
in.
Out. Oh, right. Yes. Like ran across. Well, that was, it was in the top of the World Trade Center in like one of the rooms, and somebody ran across the doorway
that
behind
was,
him, right?
Yeah.
That was horror movie moments. I mean, when you have your hero in the background constantly as stuff running around, you know something's impending.
That scares me. I don't like that feeling. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really good. This was really handled well, even though the sound's weird.
It's like a laser beam. I think it was the Netflix transfer. There were, you're right, there were more than once where I was like, okay, that no one sat and engineered the sound on this transfer.
No. Also, nobody, I mean, turn some lights on. My gosh. I understand that your budget's low and we don't want to show all the seams, but I can't see
anything. It's interesting, right? It's interesting you say that. Shout Factory, and I almost ordered this, and I still am going to order it, but I was going to do it before the show. Shout Factory came out with a 2K transfer, a transfer from the original film Blu-ray recently. Mm-hmm. And I've heard both good things and bad things. I've heard that some of the problems you're describing were taken care of, and then there's some all new problems. So but I'm interested.
I would buy
a $60 John Carpenter collection on Blu-ray.
Oh my God,
I don't know if I would buy just this, you know, just
For like around $15, got some commentary stuff on it. I might. Shout Factory. I have a collection of Shout Factory stuff, and this is up my alley.
Related, if you want to hear the worst sound transfer on Netflix, just try to watch The Prestige. Just try.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, we started watching it. I was super excited never to get to see Prestige. And we had started watching it this past week, and we turned it off and are opting to wait to pick it up on Blu-ray because it was so bad. It was almost impossible here.
The whole point of the film is Michael Caine's speech.
Yeah.
And you can't understand what he's saying on Netflix.
Out the gate.
Yeah. No, that movie's great because
you gotta complain to Netflix and make sure, because if they know about it, maybe they can do something about it.
Maybe
let's do a letter writing campaign.
Yeah,
I actually complained to Netflix a few years ago. I told you this. They put out the Cameron Crowe movie Elizabethtown without a bunch of the important music for whatever reason, and I complained. And I don't know if I made a difference, but the next time they carried it, all the music was in the proper places.
Oh, weird.
Wow. Well, I like to think that you did.
Might have been a rights thing. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. It's the same reason we don't ever get Northern Exposure. There's all these music rights fights going on with that thing, and the DVDs are different music than the TV show carried, and it's weird. That kind of stuff gets really weird. But as far as like quality of transfer and stuff, that's a bummer to hear about Prestige. I mean, I want to see my Batman versus Wolverine movie in perfect sound. Right.
With Alfred guiding him along the way.
Yeah, and a freaking Black Widow doing her business. Like, that is a big comic book movie. People just don't know it. And it's got...
And Gollum.
Yeah, and Gollum. David Bowie in that? Disney play?
Yep, David Bowie with his broken eye as Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, the Goblin King, right?
Yeah, he does a great job. Yeah, that was the last film, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
Was he juggling little steel balls in his hand or no? That's not a thing.
telling me that things are unfair.
I don't understand. All right, here's there's something about boots.
Nice boots. Nice boots.
That's what you say when you want them bad. You just say it twice.
How much those cost?
Yeah, but Jeff said they're so nice. The boots are so nice. You say it twice. That's how it works. All right, where's the president?
You want to see him sprayed all over that map, baby? Where's the president? Swear to God, Snake, I don't know.
I don't know.
I will guarantee you the word baby wasn't in the script.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'd bet money.
Probably. You're right.
I wouldn't take that bet because I would believe you.
Here's where I wrote. I just put, what's with this noise? I don't remember what it is.
It was the other one.
That's another jump scare.
That one made me jump, too.
Yeah, I don't like that
Apparently,
scene.
There's a scared monkey in Manhattan.
Because I'm living on the train in the second car by the campfire.
Yeah. Was it a monkey? I couldn't quite tell. It was weird.
I mean,
it sounded like a monkey. That was what I'm thinking.
It sounded like a monkey. Yeah,
the audio.
It's that crazy dude making all those noises.
What I want to
know. Crazy Billy Idol Buscemi dude.
Yeah, the Billy Idol Buscemi guy. I really thought it was Buscemi for a hot second. I went, he's in this too? He's in L.A. as well. Oh, my gosh. And then I went, oh, no, that's some other weirdo. I can't believe we haven't talked about this guy at all this episode. So here's our guy.
Bad neighborhood, Snake. You don't want to be walking from the Bowery to 42nd Street at night. I've been driving a cab here for 30 years, and I'm telling you, you don't walk around here at night.
Have we not talked about
Ernest?
I know.
Got 50 bucks.
Got 50 bucks.
Right, Ernest. He was amazing as cabbie. You're right. Why didn't we talk about this? He was the cabbie, which is a trope we've seen a lot of lately in Film Sack.
Yep.
Ernest Borgnine. Well, last time we saw him was on Airwolf, right? Didn't we do a
Yeah, live? We did an Airwolf live one, and then we did before that. Yeah. He would have been Convoy, I think. And else? That's it. That may be.
Have we done? We haven't done Poseidon Adventure, have we?
No.
No, but we need to.
They got yanked. I think it was on our list and got yanked or something.
Got yanked. That's probably it. Yeah.
Getting yanked. What's this? Oh, no, I already played that. Didn't I?
You want to see him sprayed?
Yeah, I already did that one. Okay, here we go.
But really quick. The fact that we've got a cab driver. Are there people taking the cab? Like, are prisoners taking the cab to other parts of Manhattan?
Yeah, that's how he makes his living? Okay.
Go ahead.
I love this little aspect of it. He says, I've been driving this taxi in Manhattan for 30 years.
Yeah.
30 right. years. So what? How is he there? Not even a criminal.
Right. So I was curious about that myself. I was curious. The character was very interesting with just that little bit of information. Because I was thinking, did he stay even though everybody else
built
left?
The walls up around me and I didn't get a chance to leave.
Is he dead already? I don't know. They killed him later.
Oh.
I don't know.
Is he a figment of Snake Plissken's imagination?
Right. He was one of the most interesting characters.
Yeah. He was the only one.
Having fun at that show with the all men.
Oh, having a lot of fun.
So much fun. Yeah. That's why I put that gift together because his face was unbelievable. Like, I could not believe how into that he was. And so I took that to mean that there aren't enough women. I mean, let's just, I don't want to be indelicate here, but there aren't enough women for the burlesque show on the prison, on the prison island.
Right.
Which is to say zero.
Right. Well, I mean, Adrienne Barbeau, but she's the only one we really saw. I think. Right?
Yeah, and the other lady that got sucked to the floor.
Oh, we saw right.
her for about a hot minute.
Her first name is Season, by the way, her real name.
Yes, yes.
Great
yes.
name.
What a weird name. Never heard that before. Here's Chef from South Park.
I said, who are you?
Stan, meet me down at the school. And hello, children. Let's see. President Yelling. Here's President Yelling.
President. You are the Duke of New York. You're a number one.
Yeah.
I want a shirt that says that. I am the Duke.
Happy Valentine, number one Duke of New York.
Or what?
Donald Pleasance.
I think that scene was also confusing me because he kept having that. He had that freaking briefcase on his arm all the way to the very end. Even though they chopped his finger, they didn't have trouble chopping his finger off, but they left that briefcase on.
Yeah, they shot it eventually. What was in it?
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah. Right, they didn't like. That would be the first thing. Is like, all right, there's got to be something in the briefcase. Let's open this thing up.
Yeah.
But it just looks like another appendage until Isaac Hayes shot it open.
Yeah. What was in it? Was that a
the tape?
The cassette tape. Right.
The cassette tape and important papers.
Uh-huh. Important documents. Blank.
Very Strange Laugh is this title. That's your weird little Salacious Crumb guy.
With
the hair. Here's something about dying.
69th Street Bridge tomorrow, 12 noon. No bullshittery's dead.
Oh, okay.
No bullshittery. No bullshittery.
I heard that too.
I know. That's what I really wanted to be.
No bullshittery. He's dead. Here is the weirdest death sound ever. What was going on there?
That was Salacious Crumb dying.
Getting stabbed.
Yeah, but what? Yeah. What? Jeez. It was a little weird.
He was trying to get one last kiss out.
Like he's a cat about to die.
That was so dumb. All right. He swears funny is what I wrote.
You asshole.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like it's your asshole. Rasshole.
I'm gonna sing it.
You asshole. You're an asshole.
And then finally, this right here.
The name's Plissken.
I think that's a good way to finish that out. Hey, great. Check this out, everybody. Oh my gosh. I can't even breathe. It's the Film Sack Checklist. There are only white people in prison in New York, except for Disco Duke. Yes, or check. They forgot to give Adrian Barbeau a bra. Check. And finally, that guy looked like Buscemi. Check. Star Trek connections are two of them. Tony Pappenfuss. He was the theater assistant. That's a great name. Pappenfuss.
Pappenfuss, get over here.
H&R Pappenfuss. Anyway, he was on DS9, played Yell in the episode Second Skin. This is also the first Daryl guy from Newhart again. So that guy again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What
was that, just a week ago we did that guy?
Wow. Yeah, no kidding.
Something like that, week or two. And then Adrienne Barbeau, she was Maggie in this. In DS9, she played Senator Kreetak in the episode Inter Arma Einem Silent Legis, however you say it.
Didn't she do some Babylon 5 as well?
Yes, she was in Babylon 5 as well. I looked that up as well. But we don't do Babylon 5 connections. But yeah, she's in that. She's totally in that. I remember that episode. She was the one, she was the Romulan that was going to, like, I don't remember the deal. She was going to defect or something. And I don't remember what the deal was. Anyway, she was good. Soundtrack great. I give it a W for weird. And it's fine.
That's fine. Keep going.
It's like three chords. Ding, ding, ding,
or
ding.
Or an A for absent at times.
Or absent, Absent is a good way of saying it. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where in 140 characters or less, you guys sum it up. Let's start with Randy.
This is, I wrote this earlier, I swear. Escape from New York. The movie What Happens When, rather than make a movie, the director sits at a keyboard and plays the same note over and over.
Nice. Ding, 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 ding. That is so true. I hate to say it. All right. Brian Dunaway.
Escape from New York. Like a disco ball air freshener and headlight chandeliers. Kind of tacky. Kind of cool. Oh, no, I'm blind.
And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Escape from New York. The 69th Street Bridge. Let me try that one more time. Escape from New York. The 69th Street Bridge is one of the best platformers of all time until you get to the wall after the final boss and the harness hangs.
Yeah, no doubt. That was like a bug. That was pretty funny. So wait, the president shot Duke, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then he got a shave, and I just wanted to mention something about the shave. That guy was the worst shaver ever. Because all he kept doing was like coming up to his face.
Smearing, right. It wasn't that he was taking stubble off. He was just smearing more sour shaving cream on.
I know we're expected not to notice those sorts of things, but I couldn't even hear what he was saying because of that. It drove me up a wall. Just don't have him being shaved, and then I'll understand.
On my resume, I now have the job I buttered Donald Pleasance.
Donald, did you notice how much he was enjoying it, though? Donald Pleasance was like making all kinds of
faces. Oh, yeah. He's into it.
Shave.
Yeah, he's getting someone who's giving him a little bit of something else now.
Well, they were somebody was playing with his snake.
A little bit of. All right. Well, on that note, look, I've had alternative titles here. Let's see. Catch Me If You Pliss Can. or Snaking Care of Business. Hey!
Oh, no, I like that one.
Yeah, I've really upped my game on the alternate titles. Moving on to emails, Adam Penrose wrote in. I'd like you to remember the name Adam Penrose because he says this. I hate the names that they make up for this stuff, quotes Scott Johnson. He says, I'm hoping... He says, I'm hoping that Scott didn't just like it being called The Fellowship. The one time I hear my last name in a movie and it gets so mouth farted on, your loyal listener, Adam Penrose.
Love it.
Because I think I literally said the Penrose Foundation like that. And
I think you did.
Yeah.
That is great.
Sorry, Adam. I wasn't trying. I didn't mean people called Penrose. In fact, you should be mad at the movie, not me. Corey also wrote in and says, hey, guys, listening to the latest episode of Film Sack 332, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. And you're currently discussing the wraparound segments in these anthology movies. Ibbitt mentions that Creepshow had the kid with the comic books and his dad who throws them away. What you guys didn't mention is who portrays that kid named Billy. His name is Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, the amazing author in his own right. My favorites of his are Lock and Key, The Cape, and NOS4A2. I also would put the fireman in there. That's a great the great book. I read that last year. Anyway, just thought I'd share that bit of trivia with you. Always love the show. Can't wait to listen every week. Thanks, Corey. So there you go. That's a little little info there. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. That's really cool trivia.
Little Joseph Hill. Actually, then he would have been something King, right? Because he changed his name to be a...
Oh, really?
Yeah, you would think. You would want your dad's last name if your dad was that famous.
I think part of that, but also I think to break out on his own and be a writer in his own right, he probably felt like he had to have his own moniker and not be under the shadow of his dad, I would think. But
right, and it would be after that. It's like how Kate Hudson, you know, changed her name because she didn't want to be Kate Russell or Kate Hahn or whatever.
Right. Is she Kurt Russell's daughter?
She's not Kurt Russell's biological daughter. No, that's Goldie Hawn's first marriage.
Right, but he helped raise her. Or he was there when the raising happened. And they've never been married officially, right, those two? They're still not married, I don't think. I think they're still just...
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they are just still partner. Like, you know.
This week on TMZ.
Do we think her biological dad is Rock Hudson or Ernie Hudson?
Oh. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson.
Hudson makes Hawk. Me happy.
Hudson Hawk. Yeah, exactly. Slurp my butt. All that. you can send your own emails into us at filmsack@gmail.com. Please do, because we love them and we like reading them here on the show. Our next film is ... is what I have written here. What are we doing next time?
That's a good one. I'm looking forward to question mark.
Yeah, question mark's going to be good. Actually, I've always said that one of the best comic book adaptations that's never been made is The Question from DC. I kind of wish they would do that. But that's nothing to do with this.
I want you to know, speaking of Stephen King, next week we're going to watch The Shining.
Oh, The Shining.
What?
Oh.
What? Really? Yeah.
The Shining.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't we watch The Shining?
Hey, it's a tough one.
No, we haven't seen The Shining. You're right. We need to do The Shining.
And it's a prepare thyselves for a long journey.
Yes.
Oh, wow. No kidding. That's crazy. Crazy pants.
That's fine. I feel like it feels like one that we have to get under our belt at some point.
Yeah.
You know.
It's very, you know, well known. Stanley Kubrick, Jack Nicholson, obviously.
Yep.
And a personal connection to one of the four of us.
Yep. Brian, did you guys know that Brian, can I bleed it now? Can I say it now?
You can bleed it now. Sure. Tease it now.
Brian tried out for the part of the little kid on the tricycle. and didn't get it, but almost did. You were in the final.
Almost
something.
Did. I was one of the last few, and I screen tested, and they've got video of me somewhere out there, somewhere on the extended Blu-ray edition that'll come out in 25 years. Mm. You'll find the Brian Ibbett audition to be.
Did you say Danny Red Corey. Rum on any cameras? Did you say
no,
Red Rum?
No, they just asked me a bunch of questions about my hobbies and what I like to do at school and things like that. And so it was just like,
did they say,
let's just find out if he can talk.
Young man, how do you feel about large amounts of blood coming out of an elevator shaft?
That's right. Yeah. How fast can you ride a big wheel?
Yeah. I think this is great that is ever
now
a thing.
Take your shirt off.
So this makes that movie even more interesting because Brian's got this.
How many times have you guys seen this movie? Oh, I mean, God. I have seen it I've seen it almost Scott Johnson Waterworld times.
Wow. Oh,
I've probably not seen this movie more than four times.
Probably three or four for me. Yeah, something like that.
And zero.
It's been, gosh.
Have you read the book? Have you read the book, Randy?
Yes, I've read. Okay. I've read. Okay. Right.
I'm very curious about how this is going to go down then. Because I think it's one of those movies that will forever freak me out. I don't think it can ever age wrongly. It's weird.
Well, I can already tell you what the thing that's going to gross Scott out. I mean, it's just grosses everybody out.
Let's take it next week.
Yeah, let's do it next week. Yeah, we'll do it next week. After that, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Nightmare on Elm Street, Last Dragon. Although there's been some talk of maybe film sacking that thing for Nerdtacular, but we'll talk more about that later. Anyway, so yeah, look forward to that. The Shining.
Be sure to set your clocks appropriately. This is a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, it's a big one.
So have fun.
It's a big one. It's a big one. And also, if you can, what's the documentary called? Room 227 or something?
Yeah, it's something like that, but it's not that. It's one.
Wait, that's the spinoff from the Jeffersons, isn't it?
Exactly. Right. That's the documentary with Jack Hay.
Yeah, exactly. No, I can't remember the
name
of it.
I'll tell you what. But no, it's Room 237, and it is streaming on Netflix.
You must watch that if you have.
And it has been for years.
It's so good, you guys. Yeah, it's so worth watching. It's all about the conspiracy theories around this movie, and it will add to your enjoyment of our next week's Film Sack if you watch. Right. So what we're basically saying is spend the next five hours total right. watching things about a scary movie.
Listen, if we can do it, you can do it.
You sure can. That's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the website. Visit there often and be there if you would. And filmsack@gmail.com. Make sure you filmsack us. filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. You can find us on Twitter @filmsack. You can review us wherever you get your podcast, and that helps us in many ways. Thank you guys so much for listening. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Jeez.
Oh.